Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Elijah Winfrey Show. I am your host, Elijah Winfrey, along with my wonderful and talented co-host, Tony Boucher. We are coming live to you this week on location. I am in DuPont, Washington, getting ready for a golf tour event. I am back in action after taking about a month and a few weeks off. I've been working on my game during that time and also doing community work, always trying to improve the community and give back. I'm excited to get back into competition. My game, I had a good practice round yesterday, but that, you know, doesn't really say too much. I'll know more when it actually counts. So I'm excited to be back, and this is the first time I'm doing the show on location, which is pretty cool, pretty neat. So if you hear people come in and out of the lobby here at the hotel, you know, try not to pay it any attention. I'm excited about today's show. And to get you caught up on things that are going on with Team Winfrey and me and so forth, I want to, again, remind everybody that my charity golf event, the Elijah Winfrey Invitational, is coming up on August 25th. Registration is open, so I hope to see all of you there. We are going to try to ongoing, you know, a donation kind of thing online on social media. Going to try to use Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to ask for donations to those who want to donate but cannot play in the tournament. So once we get that announced and up and running, hopefully we'll get some donations in, and all the proceeds go to Team Winfrey as we help kids on the autism spectrum receive one-on-one teaching and receive their graduation. We also adopt families for the holiday season. So that's where the money goes, and I'm excited about that. Tony, how has your week gone, my friend?
Oh, it's been really busy, but in such a good way. I'll warn everybody that I'm on location, too, at the College of Charleston Business Center, and so if you hear noise, you can't necessarily blame Elijah for it. It might be on my end too. I've got a couple of really neat things going on as well. After we hosted Stella on the show last week, she reached out to me, and we've been brainstorming some collaborative work that we would like to do together, particularly in terms of doing some training and support for families of kids who have the sensitivity to noise that we talked about last week. So I'm real excited about working with her on developing some things that would be, we're talking about putting some information on YouTube for people. So I'll keep you posted on what happens with that. And then the other really exciting thing that I've been working on is a handbook, a workbook for adults on the spectrum who need help to do doctor visits. It's a workbook that will help them sort through what their issues are and communicate effectively with their doctors. We know that's a real issue for folks on the spectrum, is collaborating effectively with their doctors. Taking their medication when they're supposed to or following doctor's orders can be real hard for this population, and so we're developing a workbook right now to meet those needs. So I'm real excited about that as well. So those are the two main things going on in my life.
Outstanding. Sounds like you're pretty busy. That's awesome to hear. Now, in doing the show, as all of you know, I invite any and everybody to come on. I was brainstorming this week because I had a few guests in mind, but I kind of wanted, you know, a different perspective, you know, and that's why Tony's here, and she does an outstanding job. And so she sent me a list of names of guests who could potentially be on the show, and we came up with a fabulous guest today. And I'm gonna let Tony introduce the guest and get us going here. Okay, so Tony, sure. Without further ado.
Thank you. Yeah, I am so excited to have my friend Mary Tutterow here with us today. She has written a book called The Heart of the Caregiver, and she has a really excellent website with resources for families. And she has a wonderful story that she'll be able to share a little bit about her life and what prompted her to start a caregiver website. But really, one of the things that prompted me to bring Mary to the show was a conversation last week with Stella was about how important it is to remain positive and shine that light of love and compassion. And Mary is definitely one of those people who, in spite of all the challenges that she's had in her life, has been able to really keep the focus on the positive. And so, Mary, we're so glad you could be here today. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for giving me an opportunity. You know, I'll talk about it anytime I get a chance. So,
Well, what I'd like you to do is just real briefly share a little bit about your story, what prompted you to write your book and put a resource out there that supports family caregivers.
Well, my husband, Wynn, and I have a daughter, Mary Addison, who's 25 years old, and we also have a son, William, who's 23, just graduated from college. Thank you very much. And Mary Addison was born. She actually started seizing before she was born, and so she has a seizure disorder and has had a seizure or multiple seizures every day of her life for 25 years. She's had two brain surgeries to try and control it, been on every kind of drug. She's been diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum, and quite frankly, it was tearing our family apart. And financially, it was an incredible burden to have a child with these kind of needs, emotionally, spiritually, our marriage, raising our other child, all these things that so many families know. When you've got one person with exceptional needs, there can be this sense of isolation, exhaustion, and this downward spiral into negative thinking and blame and guilt and all these things that go wrong, and then it infects the whole rest of your life. Well, at
Absolutely.
One point during our journey, I really said, there's got to be a better way to look at this. And the heart of the caregiver is what unfolded after years of journaling and research and visits with psychiatrists and all kinds of things. And it truly is a step-by-step way up out of that hole and into a world of hope and joy and love and really living life to its fullest with a family member with exceptional needs, and that it is something that is a gift to your family, not a burden. So that's the nutshell version.
Yeah. I love that you use the word gift, because a lot of what you do when you're working with people is really get them to take a look at things from a different perspective.
Yes, I call it the gift of the shift.
The gift of the shift, yes. So, I would be interested in you sharing a little bit more about what are some simple, actionable things that people who are in a similar situation, feeling really tired, frustrated, guilty, overwhelmed, financially stressed, what are some things that you have found that actually work to help people make that shift and get in a better place?
Well, you know, there's, excuse me, there's the 10 chapters of the workbook, but at the very end is something called the 5 Steps to Transformation. And that's what we use as triage for anybody who contacts us and says, I can't do this anymore. And they are very simple, actionable steps, but the key is actually doing it. So the first one is to assess your situation, to get honest with yourself and say, this is exactly what's going on in my life. And in writing those things down, very often people will find it's not your family member with autism or the IEP meeting or any of those things. It, just because they are the person that has the problem, they tend to end up being the elephant in the room that everything gets blamed on. But when you assess your situation, you'll find out it's, you know, you have to pay more taxes than you thought you were going to. Your health hadn't been so great. Your husband isn't helping very much, you know, and you find that there's a whole lot of other stuff going on. So it isn't just this person and having to care for them that's the problem. And so then the second thing you do is then acknowledge that. Then you say, okay, wow, look at all this stuff that's going on in my life, and how does it all make me feel? And so you start, and you can, now you can start to see you're dealing with a lot of emotions that are influencing the way you perceive things to be going on. And once you can see those emotions, then you can say, I don't want to feel like that anymore. I want to align with something new, and that's the third step. And that's arranging your thoughts so that they line up with a higher truth. You know, that, you know, I am okay. I have options. I can think about this another way. I can have patience. This doesn't have to be taken care of right now. You know, there's just a whole lot of things we work on in the book about aligning with a whole different thought process than the negative one that you've been in this overwhelmed and fearful state. And then the fourth thing you do is then affirm those new thoughts. Start saying them and writing them down. And then finally, you act on them. You act in a different way. Instead of chastising someone for what they can't do, you thank them for what they've tried to do and offer them a new way. I mean, it's just so easy for us parents just to go, why didn't you do it? We've done this. We've been to therapy. You know, why can't you do this? But when you align with a new way of helping someone, it's incredibly effective, and it takes all the anvil off of our chest to know that I have the power to make this a positive or a negative experience. It isn't just something being done to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned the key word in there, patience. Now, how long did it take you to get there? You know, I know when in meeting families and talking to them, you know, that's one of the things that they say that they have the hardest time with is being patient and trusting the process that it will get better and there's always a solution. So for you, how long did it take you to, you know, be patient with this process?
25 years and still working on it. You know,
still working on
it really is a process. However, the yelling and screaming and frustration in our home is dramatically less than it was. But I mean, patience, golly, I mean, how you work on patience is by being given opportunities to have to be patient. And,
right.
You know, that can go on and on. But I'll say we really did have a shift in our ability to be patient. When we did a lot of exercises, my husband and I, on it really isn't about what you think it's about. It isn't really about having the perfect family. It isn't really about having the clean house. It isn't really about so many of the things that have been ingrained in us all of our lives about what is important. And when we could let go of, because when you make that mess, you know, when that child makes that mess and doesn't clean it up or screams in the grocery store or whatever, the immediate reaction is, you know, what do other people think? How much is this going to cost to repair this? You know, are they going to call the police? You know, there's so
right.
many things that run through your head. And when you can learn to just quiet those thoughts and have your first response be patience and then allow those other things that have to be dealt with to come, it's so much better that way. It's not being irresponsible and saying, I'm not going to deal with this. It's just saying, it's teaching yourself to allow patience to come first, and then everything can work out better.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Another word you mentioned was, you know, having power, feeling a sense of power instead of, you know, being in that victim position. And what Eli's saying about, you know, the difficulty to develop patience, I'm really seeing as you're talking to us today about how those two go hand in hand, because you're taking control over what you can at the moment, and that's your own inner game, your own thoughts, your own emotions, and letting those other things, accepting that those other things you have to deal with the consequences. Yes, you're going to have to pay for that shelf of broken things or, you know, leave the building, but you are still in charge of how you react to what's happened. So I really like how you've put those two concepts of patience and power together.
Absolutely. And I, excuse me, and I think the other part of the patience and power practice is remembering to come at things from love, not from fear. That when I'm in the grocery store and we've had a meltdown, or when I'm at the end of my day and someone's created an incredible mess, the things that make me angry and make me fearful are the things like, I don't have enough energy to do this. I don't have enough patience to handle this one more time. You know, you have that negative talk, but what that really is fear. That's really fear and inadequacy talking. But when you align with things like, I have enough, there's always enough time. I am able to love one more minute today. It's a whole chapter in the book, a chapter and a half actually, but aligning yourself with love and what would love do in this situation and not fear, and you start realizing that the language of your anger isn't really a result of what this person is doing. It's a result of your own fear.
You can't blame anybody.
I like that.
Wow.
Well, right. You can't blame anybody. And imagine how much different your family member would feel if they didn't feel like they were a source of constant blame. And, you know, I think that's so often the source of what I call angst that I see in people with disabilities. And it's this, so much has been blamed on me for being who I am that I can't help but be.
Yes.
And I carry this burden, and therefore I act out because I know no other way to act upon this pain I feel of being blamed for so much. And what they're really carrying is the burden of their parents' own fear and the blame of other people's fear about people with disabilities or people who are different. And when we, as individuals in a community, respond to differences in love, the response from the individual is dramatically different. That level of trust.
I agree.
Huge.
You know, I you know, I often tell people, you know, you have to love hard, extremely hard. Some people that I talk to about that, they understand. Some look at me kind of sideways, like, well, what do you mean? You know, and you have to learn to love extremely hard. That's one of the things that I've done all my life, to a fault to some degree, but I do agree with you. I think you have to love hard. I think it's so important to do that. It's real easy to go in the opposite direction. I think a lot of times, because it's so easy, that's what you see a lot of, and nobody takes the time, or not a lot of people take the time to really love as hard as they can and should.
Well, and the very first step in the whole workbook is learning to receive love for yourself first. Learning to love yourself. You can't give what you don't have. And if I think that what's going on with this child, I mean, it's a huge knot to untie of all this blame and self-doubt and fear and all of, and can I trust myself around this child? I've hit them before. Can I trust myself ever again? You know, and then all those emotions. But really the very first one, when you say to somebody, love hard, if they haven't learned to know that they are loved, they can't give it. So that's the whole
right.
First chapter of the book is getting yourself straight about how loved you are and what you have available to you and the grace and mercy that's already been extended to you and that you can now extend to others, because there is no one to blame. It just is what it is. There is no blame. I mean, you know, I tell this to Tony, and I think sometimes she raises her eyebrow, but, you know, when I get out of the car and it's raining and I run into my house, one person will run into their house and go, oh, God, I'm a mess, and God, and it's raining, and now I've tracked mud in the house, and my hairdo's all shot, and my papers are wet, and, oh, man, the rain. And there's the other person who comes in the house, and, you know, well, I got rained on. And the difference is you can't blame the rain.
Right.
We're all looking for someone to blame our upsetness on. That first person is upset with something else, not the rain. The rain's just doing what it does. And that's the same thing with our special needs family member. You have to be secure in yourself and in your own ability to be loved as yourself before you can allow that grace to someone else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Outstanding. You're doing an amazing thing here. I am so appreciative of having you on the show and to share these views and these topics to help others. I think it is so vital that we have wonderful folks like yourself on this platform, you know, letting people know, you know, about, you know, the struggles and overcoming them. So I'm really appreciative that you're here today.
Well, I'm always glad to have an opportunity to talk about it because really, Elijah and Tony, in the big picture, you know, we dream of a world where people with differences are fully accepted and find their place and are allowed to contribute what it was they were born to contribute and all that. But until the very people with whom they live can see them that way, how can you expect the rest of community to see it? There has to be peace
right.
and love and acceptance in our homes again. Instead of, you know, how I was in the beginning when everybody at my daughter's school was terrified to see me coming down the hall. Oh, no, it's Miss Tutterow. She's always angry. You know, she's always beating up on somebody to get something out of them for her child. You know, when I really began practicing this becoming a person of peace, we got so much more done. And if the world sees the parents being completely frazzled and divorced and impatient and all, how can you expect the rest of community to deal with our family members in a respectable and loving way?
Right.
Absolutely. So I do have a bigger mission here.
Mary, I have one other question for you that ties in with that, and that is what can, you know, you've just talked a lot today about what, you know, family members, caregivers can do. How can communities better support family members who are doing the tough caregiver work?
Well, gosh, there's so many levels of definition of community, you know. I mean, probably the source of the greatest frustration is the immediate larger family, aunts, uncles, cousins, sisters, brothers, you know, that community in itself. And they have to be welcomed in. When we have a child with special needs, we so often tend to isolate because we don't want people to see how messy it is and how hard it can be, and we're afraid other people will run from us. But if we're going to change things, when we are allowing it to be a gift and a blessing to us to learn how to love on this incredible level of the word is escaping me right now. Well, why not allow all kinds of people to learn how to love and to enjoy differences and brokenness and weakness and to get, I mean, it benefits everyone. You know, it benefits everyone. So I would say the number one thing is don't isolate and don't be afraid of how messy it is. You know, we all need to be included in the solution. And I think if I had to say one thing to families, I would say, you know, don't be afraid to go into the restaurants and the grocery stores and to go to your great aunt's house for Easter and all those things that we don't do because we're so afraid of what other people will think and how they'll react.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. Right. But if you're a crazy mess and you take a crazy mess and you create a crazy mess, you're not helping anybody. But if you've gotten your act together and you can teach people how to love and accept and help people who are struggling and help people work with people with differences, you're a gift. You're exactly what our communities need. I have some really great friends who go with a child to restaurant all the time who clearly has incredible differences and challenges to overcome. And almost every single time they leave a restaurant, somebody pays their tab and leaves them a note saying, "You've given our family a gift today." That's where we're meant to get to.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. Powerful stuff today. I'm super impressed. I'm at a loss right now. But before I let you go, where can listeners get the book, The Heart of the Caregiver?
It's at theheartofthecaregiver.com. And you can download the 5 Steps to Transformation. It's a free PDF download, and you actually watch me and a small group of people go through it. You can have access to a video as well. Then there's a sample chapter from the book you can download, which is the whole chapter on shifting your perception. And then you can connect through signing up for our regular monthly encouragement email that we do, and then you can connect through our Facebook pages. We have a closed group for discussions, and then we just kind of have an open group on what's going on in the Heart of the Caregiver, where you get announcements. In the fall, we have a bunch of online classes starting up, live small groups. We find that people have a hard time making it to community-based small groups, finding the time and finding the person to care for someone while they go take a break, so we just do it online. Where people can connect. And, you know, I got to say, that's a very powerful thing, is connecting. Don't do this alone. Connect with other people. So there's lots of resources. Theheartofthecaregiver.com.
Outstanding. Now before we let you go, I do this thing where I have my listeners email me questions during the week to ask the guests on the show. And we have a question from Rachel in Los Angeles for you, Mary. And she wants to know, who are some of your role models growing up, and why do you feel it's important to give back and help others?
Wow. Well, my role models growing up were really different from the role models that I have now. I used to have role models that were all about beauty and looks and fashion and materialism and stuff like that. But ever since I've launched on this journey, my role model is Mother Teresa, quite frankly. I mean, I've never seen anybody so willing to wade into brokenness and differences and love exceptionally, and what happened when she did that. I mean, that's what gave me so much hope, and my husband so much hope, was we can not only change our family, we can change the way community sees brokenness. So she was it, and I like I said before, I believe that's important to give other people that vision of what a loving family can do when they in love publicly. I think it changes a lot of things.
I love it. Well, my friend, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the time out of your day to be on the show. I'm very blessed and thankful for that. And anytime, and I mean this, anytime you want to come on and promote something or talk about something, you are more than welcome to do so.
Oh, thank you so much. I love it. I love to chat with folks like you. So thank you.
Tony, is there anything you would like to add before we let our wonderful guests go?
No, thank you very much, Mary.
Thanks, Tony, for having me. I will see you again. I know I will.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Listen, this is our platform, so you're more than welcome, okay?
Thanks. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Wow, that was very impactful. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would say Mary has lived the hardcore caregiver life, and so she's really come through to her wisdom, you know, really by living it, really. And so, yeah, I think she has a message that I love, because it's not just for families of, you know, for the kid on the spectrum. Her message is for everybody, but it's particularly salient for those people who are really, we're all going to be caregivers at one point,
Right.
And so, you know, her message is relevant to everyone.
Wow. Outstanding. You know, I do have a few questions for us this week. I'm just at a loss. This is why I love to do what I do. You know, you meet fabulous people, not always in person. That comes later, but you know, through social media and if done correctly, this is what happens. You know, you get these powerful folks on who have an outstanding message and they're giving back to the community, and this is what keeps me motivated. You know, I know I love playing golf, but you know, this far outweighs the things that I will ever do on a golf course. So I'm very thankful for this platform.
Yeah, it's powerful. It's, you know, and when you think about, there are people all over the world who can listen to this show today and connect with Mary and you and I, and that's, you know, all of a like mind, all people who are wanting the same hopes and dreams for our world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I asked you to send me email questions and you delivered. We're going to take two pretty good questions today, I must say. One that I really wanted to talk about personally. But we're going to get to the first question from Tim in Columbia, South Carolina. And Tony, she wants to know, I love that you are hosting this show with Eli. What have you learned about yourself thus far that maybe you didn't know in hosting a show?
Tim, that's a great question. And you're close to home, so I hope to meet you someday. One thing that I've learned is I really love this format. I think a member last week asked if I'd ever considered doing a radio show, and I've had so much. I'm feeling that sense of gratification and just powerful connection that you're talking about, Eli, and I had no idea before I did this with you, that was something that could have such a meaningful impact for people. So I think that's really what I've learned about myself.
Awesome. You're a natural. I will say that. I mean, you come across as you have the radio voice. It's almost sometimes I kind of daydream a bit when you know, because I feel like, wow, this is Tony's show. Really, I mean, I'm just here, but she's moving along really well, and it's outstanding having you as a co-host. It's a blessing. So thank you. I'm enjoying it so much.
Yeah, thank you. I'm trying to hear what your question is.
Yeah, so the next question comes from Kelly in Ohio, and she wants to know, Eli, do you consider yourself a celebrity? You know, my friends call me that, and I know they're teasing. And I've been asked that, and you know, I never look at myself in that term or that form. I think a celebrity is what they call you. It's not your profession. It's not what you do. I think of myself as just a regular guy trying to do extraordinary things to make the community and the world better. I don't, you know, have a desire to have a limo and a flashy car, and not to say there's anything wrong with that, because, you know, to each his own. I like the low key style, and I love being the cheerleader. You know, I don't want to take credit for anybody's success, but I would love to have the pom poms in the back room cheering and laughing and waving and motivating in that form. You know, me and Limelight, in all honesty, it wouldn't be a good fit, because I would feel that at a certain point it would become all about Eli and less about the cause, and I don't ever want to get that lost. I kind of feel like it's important to make sure that, you know, what I'm doing is for the right reasons, and never get selfish to such a degree that it distorts the message that I'm trying to to get out there and to help these families. And that's one of the reasons why when I promote things on social media, I make sure to talk about what I'm doing, where the money's going, who I'm interacting with, and how they've influenced me to continue to do these things and be better. So celebrity, no, I'll leave that to Hollywood and those guys and girls. I'm low key Eli is what one of my friends called me, low key Eli. So I'll stick with low key Eli. That's a great question though.
Yeah, I hear you saying that really you want your public life to be about the message versus a person, which I think is really a great perspective. And I just want to ask a follow-up question to that, if I might.
Sure.
I'm curious, do you have to do this? Like, is there some kind of a feeling like you just have to step up to the plate and do this from a, like an inner sense? I get the sense this is about a mission for you, about.
Yes. That's a great question. That's a great follow-up. Ever since I was a kid, I've always wanted to help people and see people smile. And along the way, I kind of lost my way, and while it was still in me to do it, I forgot a lot of the tools that were necessary to do it. And I think joining the military and learning again what leadership really meant, it gave me, you know, a newfound appreciation of who I was and what I was trying to do, and it kind of gave me the blueprint. Now, you know, I have an incredible wife that's helped me along the way in this process, because I can, you know, I can say yes, maybe too much to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's always been a mission to change the world for the better, but be in the background when it's changing. You know what I mean? It's like I like being part of the process. I don't want the light completely shine on myself. So yeah, you know, it's been something that I feel like it's been in me since I was a kid. You know, I would always tell my mom, I want to help people, right? And I never knew, you know, what cause I was going to support. I think my niece and nephew having autism kind of sparked all of this to kind of pick up steam and really move forward. Not to say that I wouldn't have done it if they were not autistic, but, you know, it's something that I feel like, yes, it's been in me to do for a long time, motivated to do it. Yeah. Great question.
Wow. It's really, really neat. And one thing that I'm hearing you say, and I think a lot of us are feeling that too, is it's not about being, you know, a center of attention. It's about being part of a bigger whole and, you know, being
right.
That cheerleader. It's the theme we had last week about us all being interconnected. And so it's hard to see it as just a, you know, it's not a one-man show. It's all of us together.
Right.
Doing our part.
Absolutely. 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 Well, thank you all for the email questions. And again, if you have questions for Tony and I, please email me at elijah.winfrey@gmail.com, and we'll get to as many as we can. Maybe we'll do a show again with just questions only. I would like to thank our guest again today, Mary Tudorow. She's amazing, awesome. She's doing great things in the community. Please go out and get her book, The Heart of the Caregiver. I'd like to thank Tony for having Mary come on the show today. In closing, as I always do, I want to thank everybody for tuning in and supporting Tony and I. It's truly an honor to be doing this show every week. I'm glad to be back, and I'm also glad to have a fabulous co-host who carries me throughout the show. with her amazing questions. So I'm very, very thankful for that. And until next time, take care, God bless, and get out there and make someone or something better. You have it in you. Use your gifts. This has been the Elijah Winfrey Show on blogtalkradio.com.